Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org.
On the evening of June 29th, a new word blew our way, derecho. Packing sustained winds of up to 80 miles an hour, the wave of destructive force traveled from Chicago to Virginia in just 10 hours, leaving little time for warning. I'm Aileen Lee, and this is Virginia Conversations. Thanks for joining us today. The derecho knocked out power to more than half of Appalachian Power's customers, and nearly half of Dominion's. Thousands of those were left in the dark of night and the often record-breaking heat of day for a week or more. A preliminary estimate by Appalachian Power puts the cost of repairs at $94 million. $37 million of that in Virginia. Dominion says it suffered about $74 million in damage statewide. In addition, the derecho caused millions of dollars of damage for Virginia localities. Beverly Amsler reports on where those communities and utilities are coming up with the money to clean up the mess.
Financial numbers being released by local government officials for the cost of cleaning up from the derecho are staggering and rising nearly every day. The costs range from $200,000 in Albemarle County to as much as $1 million in Lynchburg, which was one of the hardest hit areas. Some communities, such as Lynchburg, will dip into their reserves to foot the bill. Because the July 29th storm came so close to the end of the fiscal year, the cleanup costs will have to come from the 2012 fiscal budget, potentially straining the current budget. Kimball Payne is Lynchburg's city manager.
Any costs associated will go back to our bottom line from fiscal 12, and we normally anticipate that we have several million dollars to the good when we close out a fiscal year, and it will reduce the amount of that that balance. That balance then is usually put into capital projects, so it could have an impact on capital projects moving forward.
Help may be available from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. FEMA is making money available to more than 60 Virginia localities, plus some private nonprofit groups for emergency work and the cost of repairing or replacing facilities damaged by the storm. The derecho made a big hole in the budgets of organizations that deal with disasters on a daily basis. Amy Whitaker says the Roanoke chapter of the American Red Cross spent more than $100,000 on its response.
We had more than 15 overnight shelters and cooling centers opened. We provided safe, cool respite for families needing help. 1,800 people that came through our shelters, and we served more than 33,000 meals to people all up and down the western portion of Virginia.
The Salvation Army provided food and other services statewide at a cost of tens of thousands of dollars. Expect some utilities to pass along their cleanup costs to customers. Appalachian Power spokesman Todd Burns says it's not known how or when customers would pay.
But it's uncertain what ultimate impact that would have on customers' bills. There'll be a lot of things that'll be considered whenever we do ultimately take a request to the commission. For example, you know, coal fluctuates widely, so if we happen to go in and have a decrease in coal costs, it could offset these. So it's too early to say what the actual impact would be on customers' bills.
But Daisy Pridgen says no Dominion Virginia Power customer will be required to foot a portion of the bill.
It'll come out of our normal operating expenses, which also covers costs for storm recovery.
Something everyone agrees on is that it'll take more time to finish the repairs and cleanup and total the cost of doing that work. I'm Beverly Amsler.
The power's back on, but the work continues for the power companies, including the dozens of electric co-ops that will serve Virginia as well. And part of that post-derecho work is learning from the storm. Our guests today are Charles Patton, president of Appalachian Power. He's coming to us from Charleston, West Virginia. Rodney Blevins, vice president of distribution operations for Dominion Power. And David Kugler, vice president of customer services for Rappahannock Electric Cooperative. Both of them are coming from Richmond. Thank you all for joining us today. Charles, I'd like to start with you. At the top of the show, we talked about some of those numbers. That's devastating in and of itself from a financial perspective. Could you give us a people perspective of what your customer base looked like, communities, families, people who were going through this storm at the height of the storm?
Sure. As we pointed out, as it related to Appalachian Power Company, which has roughly a million customers between Virginia and West Virginia, we had 577,000 out at the derecho. In addition to that, we sometimes forget that that week there were a series of very significant thunderstorms that occurred, four, in fact, later that week, which caused over 100,000 outages on our system. And while some of those were repeat of folks that we had restored, it definitely made restoration all the more difficult. That being said, when you look in our footprint, in particular the Appalachian Power footprint, you find areas that are tend to be more rural. They tend to be more economically challenged. And so this storm had placed incredible stress, not only just the general discomfort of the storm itself and inconvenience of the storm, but also financially in our footprint.
Todd Burns, your communications manager with APCO, says, quote, "This was a once-in-a-lifetime storm." We hope, he added. And he says that, really, this one was twice as much damage of anything that we've ever experienced. I'd like to turn to you, Rodney Blevins, and if you could shed a little bit of light on Dominion's perspective of its customer base. What was going on with you?
Certainly. Thank you, May. We have about 2.4 million customers, and of those, we had over a million customers affected by this event on June 29th. It's the largest non-hurricane restoration effort in our history. And if you think about that in terms of hurricane restoration, you typically get the benefit of a week to plan for it, and being denied that opportunity was a tremendous challenge. However, we were, I would say in terms of our customer base, it didn't differentiate. We had extraordinary damage across the Shenandoah Valley. We had extraordinary damage in Northern Virginia, Richmond, Virginia, and damage in the Hampton Roads area as well. We were able to mobilize crews from 18 states in Canada to effect restoration in about a week.
You mentioned Hampton Roads, and I hope to touch on that a little bit later. Hampton Roads was not as hard hit or equally hard hit, in your estimation?
Not as hard
hit. Okay, great, because we do want to address that as well. In the meantime, I want to open up the phone lines, because our audience is a part of Virginia Conversations. Join the discussion by calling our toll-free number. That's 866-611-NEWS, and that's, again, 866-611-6397. You'll have a chance to talk with representatives from Dominion, Appalachian Power, and the Rappahannock Electric Cooperative, which brings me to David Kugler. Now, I should, by full transparency, say that you also have ties to Dominion, because that's where you worked for many, many years.
Yes, I did, May Lilly. I've been with Rappahannock now for a year and a half as their Vice President of Customer Services.
Well, that's wonderful, and it's great to have you on board. Please feel free to chime in with some of your experiences with Dominion as well. We're not going to hold you directly to your title with Rappahannock. But again, an electric cooperative has a completely different set of challenges. Explain.
Yes, our customer base and our service territory covers 22 counties. So we go from the Middle Peninsula along the Rappahannock River, east of I-95, all the way to the Blue Ridge Mountains, and then up to the West Virginia border near Winchester. This storm for us was unique in that it hit every part of our service area. 18 of the 22 counties were impacted, unlike a lot of the hurricanes, which may just clip the eastern part of the service area. With the weather conditions the way they were, and as Charles was describing, APCO's service area in southwest Virginia, ours is comparable. A lot of rural areas, a lot of rugged terrain. We had a challenge to get to some of the areas. A lot of the repairs, you could work all day and just get a few homes back on. The 100-degree weather is difficult for our members. We call them members. They're customer owners. It's difficult because of lack of air conditioning, but probably more importantly, a lot of the folks that we serve have wells and don't have public water, so they don't have a water supply or sewer system if they don't have electricity. So a big part of our focus was getting the word out to everybody that, you know, this could take some time. It's going to take a few days. You may need to make other arrangements to get through the week, especially with the difficult weather conditions. And we also were really focused on our employees, our line crews that were out in extreme working conditions. we were really focused on safety, making sure they stayed hydrated. They took breaks. They were working 16-hour days in very, very difficult conditions. And I know some of our linemen said this was the most difficult working conditions they've ever had to endure for a week during storm restoration.
We have a caller, Butch, from Newport, who has a comment or question about right-of-way maintenance. This will apply to all of you. Go ahead, Butch. Okay, we'll try to get him up on air in just a moment. One of the things that people never knew before this came along is exactly what a derecho is. And we pulled up a definition. It's just a Wikipedia definition, but it kind of gives you an idea of how different and unique this storm front was to Virginia. A derecho is a widespread, long-lived, straight-line windstorm associated with a fast-moving band of severe thunderstorms. They travel quickly in the direction of movement of their associated storms. They are typical in warm weather, such as June and July, so we were no exception in that regard. Let me turn back to you, Charles. There was a story that was told about one of the customers right on the front lines while crews were working to try to restore power, because we talk about the inconveniences of power outages, but then there are the real concerns that go to the health and safety of people during power outages. And we heard about one family in particular who was really eager, and that's an understatement, to restore power because their grandmother was very, very ill, gravely ill, and that became a top priority for APCO to get some kind of power restored to aid in her comfort in really what was sort of end-of-life situation for the family.
Right. Well, and for us, what we try to do is we identify those customers that are what we call critical care customers, and to the extent possible, we do try to prioritize hospitals, pumping stations, and then those customers that we're aware of under those circumstances. And despite our best efforts, the reality is that you also have to work with a plan that's basically operating off what you're given, and that is if you have transmission out, if you have distribution stations out, oftentimes you have to take care of that work before you can ever address someone like the customer with which you reference. But when we are aware of those situations, we do everything we can to help, but keeping it in balance with the overall restoration of the entire system.
We have Butch back. Butch, go ahead with your question.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just have, a comment and a question. I spoke with an APCO line supervisor who was out with a contract crew after the storm, and he stated what myself and my neighbors have known for a very long time is that the amount of preventive maintenance that's done as far as clearing right-of-ways of trees and other obstructions by APCO is pretty much next to nil. And he said that, you know, boy, if we could have taken care of this, about two-thirds of our job wouldn't even be necessary right now. And it seemed a little disingenuous to me that APCO is passing along costs for this kind of stuff to the customers when other companies don't seem to necessarily need to do that. When APCO could have taken some proactive steps prior to this, it took us 8 years to get APCO to come out and trim the lines in my area after begging and pleading by four of us. And we were still without power for 10 days because the right-of-way coming into our area was so overgrown.
Charles?
How is APCO going to address that in the future?
Right. Here's a question about preventative maintenance. How do you respond to those customers?
Okay, sure. A couple of things. First of all, what we do is we have a vegetation management plan, and it is not a cycle plan where we say clear right-of-ways in like every 4 years. What we call a 4-year plan cycle trim. What we do is we identify those areas that are most in need and the ones that create the most risk for our customers, and we address those in our cycle trim program. And we have spent roughly the same amount of money on our right-of-way spend over the last few years. And I would be the first to admit that I would like to see us get on a four-year cycle trim program. In fact, we have a pilot program that we'll be submitting to the commission here in September. Well, we actually have submitted it, and we'll be having hearings on it in September, where we'd like to move to a four-year cycle trim program. Why we have not moved to that direction, it really becomes a pocketbook issue. And it relates to what the gentleman's question was about why APCO is asking for recovery and others may not be. Well, the reason that APCO is asking for recovery and others may not, if you look at what we have in our annual storm reserve to cover storms in our system, it is woefully less than the cost of this storm, first of all. Secondly, when you look at the overall financial performance of APCO, it is significantly less than Dominion. And so we cannot afford, and while we should balance the cost of these storms, and we will, the reality is that absent some form of additional recovery for this extraordinary event that we didn't plan for, and just like many other cities we heard in previous in the previous story, we can't afford to pay for it. And so, and likewise, when you look at our annual budget at APCO, we can't afford to go to a four-year cycle. A lot of the headroom, and headroom is that ability to add additional cost to our customers, has been squeezed over recent years because of environmental compliance requirements that the company has faced.
Rodney and or David, how about Dominion's or Rappahannock Electric's reserves for this, you know, right-of-way maintenance?
This is Rodney. I'll go first. We spend about double what we spent on right-of-way maintenance a decade ago. Tree trimming, tree contact is the number one cause of outages on a day-to-day basis, and we recognize that addressing that issue will help us keep the lights on a day-to-day basis. But let's be fair. In an event like this, where entire trees are coming over, it's not going to help us in a crisis like we experienced on June 29.
Okay.
In terms of how that's how that's funded. Really, one of the things that we have that's very constructive in the state of Virginia is a biennial review process for the investor-owned utilities, where we file a rate case every other year. And the costs associated with our normal operating budget, like our vegetation management program, as well as the cost of the storm, will be considered in that. And ultimately, the commission will decide whether or not we get recovery for it.
You're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. Today, we're talking about the lessons learned by power utilities in the wake of the June 29th derecho. Next week, we'll be discussing improvements in the classroom as Governor Bob McDonnell's summit on education reform is underway in Richmond. Stay with us. We're back with more in a moment. You're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. Today, lessons learned from the June 29th storms across Virginia. Charles Patton, president of Appalachian Power, Rodney Blevins, vice president of distribution operations for Dominion Power, and David Kugler, vice president of customer services for Rappahannock Electric Cooperative, are joining us. And you can join the conversation by calling our toll-free number, 866-611-NEWS. We have a call from James in Charlottesville. Go ahead, James.
Hi. I'm wondering if you could put the power lines underground, either cables in a trench or in a utility tunnel, especially in high population density areas.
Right, so we wouldn't have vulnerable power lines above ground as we have for so long. Who wants to take that?
I'm
happy to start. In fact, there's a U.S. Energy Information Administration report that was recently released on this subject, and it's and typically after a hurricane or a significant event like this, the idea of burying lines usually comes up. And there are two things to remember. First of all, the cost of burying lines tends to be 5 to 10 times the cost of overhead lines. And then the second, the second issue around burying lines is that what you discover is that if you bury lines, distribution lines in a neighborhood, for say, and I ran into some folks when I was in Roanoke who were at the end of the recovery time. Although they had underground lines in their neighborhood, because a storm of this magnitude is, as Rodney had pointed out, when you have transmission lines down, when you have stations out, and a significant amount of your repairs are kind of upstream, then even if you have underground facilities, it's not necessarily going to aid in the restoration process. So it's costly. There may be some places where it makes sense, but it is not a panacea.
Rodney, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, just to give you some context of the cost of it, after Isabel in 2003, the Virginia State Corporation Commission did a study that statewide it would cost $80 billion to bury the electric infrastructure. And to put some context to that, to fund that, it would require an additional $3,000 in annual utility bills for every customer, which is clearly cost prohibitive. All that said, our customers, we listen, and our customers are telling us they want us to look at undergrounding in some way, shape, or form. It has a number of technical challenges, and as good listeners, we're going to continue to look at it and see if there's not some progress we can make there. A third of our facilities are already underground, and most of what we put in today is underground.
Okay. You know, Rodney, David, and Charles, this is an overarching question because you've gotten the gamut of commendations for how you've responded to this storm, which is so unique from any prior storm, and then criticism after criticism. What do you tell the public when you get complaints about the service and at the same time are lauded for your service?
Well, as far as Appalachian Power Company goes, we do believe that our employees performed admirably in the restoration process. But that being stated, the reality is we do have an ongoing obligation to our customers to be better. And, for example, if you go back and you look at the winter storm of 2009, which prior to the derecho had been the largest storm in APCO's history, we did extensive reviews after that storm and challenged ourselves and learned. And if you look at the statistics from this storm, if you look at our communications with the public, our coordination with state and local agencies during this storm, you will see a marked improvement. And I believe that the emergency of professionals in those locations would concur with what I'm saying, is that we improved dramatically. And likewise, despite all the accolades and despite all the things that we did well, there is still room for improvement. One of the challenges that we have is that the level of granularity around letting individual customers know when their service is going to be restored. While we do a pretty good job of that, there's definitely room for improvement.
There are technical challenges when you bring people in off the system who don't have the same equipment that you have. A lot of the data that we usually transmit through computer end up getting transmitted via paper. And so one of the things that we're going to have to do is look and see if technology can help us solve that equation. And that's just one example, but there are always things that we find after a storm that we could do better, despite what I believe was an outstanding job by our employees.
Our number is 866-611-NEWS. That's 866-611-6397. We invite you to join the conversation. And one caller has Chuck from Richmond. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I want to, first of all, just acknowledge and express my appreciation and gratefulness to the power company. I can only imagine the organizational infrastructure it took to respond to a disaster like this. We were out of power for some time, but I had no complaints and was just very grateful to the work and effort on all of your parts to restore power. So I just wanted to say that. The second thing I wanted to ask about is the concept of prevention, I guess. The term was introduced, tree damage. I guess tree contact was a phrase that causes most of these problems. And it seems to me it's unfair to expect the utility company to cover all this tree maintenance. I wondered if there could be a program where customers could be proactive and share in the expense of removing trees that look problematic or have a high probability of knocking down power lines. I live out in the west end of Henrico County. We have trees that are exceeding 80 feet in height, and if one goes down, it's going to cause a catastrophe, not only possibly to structures, but to the power line. So in my mind, I'm thinking, well, if I could, or my neighbors could get some help in removing some of these large trees, perhaps we could share the expense and then for just a few thousand dollars prevent a problem that could cost many, many thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm. What about Dominion or Rappahannock?
Thank you, Chuck, for that that question. And I appreciate your thoughtfulness about the talking about the restoration effort. David, Charles, and I don't climb poles for a living. The folks that deserve those commendations are the ones that do, and I appreciate your comment. Regarding the tree program, we have a tree removal program where we, in addition to our cycle trim, will remove trees that endanger the power line. But we typically reserve that for trees that are dead or dying or that are affected, for instance, by the drought right now. What I would tell you is if you see trees that you believe are endangering the power lines and you would like for one of our arborists or foresters to look at it, please call us at 1-866-DOM-HELP, and we appreciate the help.
And what about you, David? I wanted to at least circle back with you on this as well.
Yeah, the same response as Rodney. We have a cycle program of every 5 years. We tree clear our right-of-ways. That's our second largest operation and maintenance expense, only to labor. Our company, Rappahannock, has been recognized by the Arbor Day Foundation for over 10 years now as a tree line USA utility. It means we use quality tree practices and educate our customers about where and where not to plant trees. But same as Rodney said, if folks see a tree near their home or somewhere that's dead or dying that looks like it could have danger of falling into the right-of-way, please let us know about that. We'll have our professionals come out and take care of it.
I don't know if this is too esoteric, but Jeff from Blacksburg called and left a message, and he wants to return to that discussion of the cost of burying lines. He's off the phone now, but this is what he conveys. Is there a cost estimate per customer to get that ball rolling, in essence? And again, if that's really not a calculation that's been part of your strategic planning, fine, that was his question.
May Lily, I think I was the one that threw the figures out there. Basically, the $3,000 per customer per year is what it would require an increase in rates to support the installation of the infrastructure underground. And that's probably as good a number as you can come up with. I realize it's very broad and across the entire Commonwealth, but that just kind of gives you a scope of the scale of it.
Okay. Now, we talked a little bit about Hampton Roads. This is an area that wasn't as hard hit, and yet there are still lessons to be learned for their future and their future preparedness. So as far as Dominion goes, are there any specific needs that differentiate Hampton Roads from Central Virginia or other regions?
The Hampton Roads area has a long history. We work very closely with the jurisdictional emergency management team because of the fact they are right on the Atlantic coast and most susceptible to hurricanes. We get a lot of practice in that area. We learned a lot after Hurricane Irene last year, frankly, and I believe that the improvements we made helped us in this event. I would say that area and probably these type of restoration events are more familiar to them in other parts of the state. The Shenandoah Valley, Northern Virginia, for instance, they had their hurricane this time, and it was a little bit different for them. The things we learned, though, May Lily, were uniform. They were the same across the state because we don't do a restoration effort any different in Hampton Roads area than we do in the Shenandoah Valley.
Okay. Theo from Lynchburg has a question. Go ahead, Theo.
Hello. I have a statement and a question. I'm a retired architectural designer, and I realize that cost to do everything underground is absolutely prohibitive. But with all the goods and services that we are not getting anymore, people who are non-sighted, let's say can't even reach voice information anymore, I think it's unfair to pass it on to the customer. I think the rates are high enough. I keep my rates specifically low because I use dimmer switches and I'm very cost efficient. But this was a very unusual situation. I'm also an environmental practitioner. I'm wondering why there'd be an option to pass the cost to consumers when we're already stretched so thin as is. That was my question and my statement.
Who would you like to answer that?
I have no preference. Maybe Appalachian Power, since I do live in that region.
Okay, Charles.
Well, again, a regulated utility, typically what happens in our business, and albeit being a monopoly, we are a regulated monopoly where the cost of our business, of doing business, is reviewed by the Public Utility Commission, as Rodney pointed out, on a biennial basis, and the rates are set based on those costs that are deemed appropriate for us to deliver our service to our customers. And to the extent that you have a extraordinary event that takes those costs out of kilter, so to speak, and then the company is adversely affected economically, it's not a simple decision of saying, well, the company can simply ask its shareholders to eat those costs, because ultimately, if the company in any way becomes unhealthy or it becomes challenged with its own financials, then what happens is the ability for that company to go out and raise money to continue to provide service to the customers it serves can be challenged. And so it's just part of the process of doing business. Again, it's going to be very closely scrutinized by the commission, and only those costs that they deem necessary and appropriate to maintain the financial integrity of the utility are those that would be ultimately passed to our customers.
On the matter of rates, back in June, Virginia APCO rate hikes were announced, and I'll just read you the press blurb from it so we can launch into a mini discussion on this, not to dwell on it too long, but it is on everybody's mind every time a Dominion Power or an Appalachian Power customer gets a bill. It says Appalachian Power bills will soon be increasing for customers in Virginia. The company's new fuel rate, approved by the Virginia State Corporation Commission, took effect Friday. The average customer will see their monthly bill increase by 7.2%, or approximately $7.56. The fuel rate is the portion of the electric bill used for the cost of fuel used to generate electricity, as well as the wholesale purchase and sales of power. And I imagine that there's a general thought, without much delving into it, that there's a lot of profit margin in that, in pegging rate increases to changes in costs. I was looking into this and saw that there really isn't that huge a profit margin at all. Can either of you take that? I know this is an APCO announcement, but either Dominion or APCO could probably respond to this one.
Well, since we filed it, the truth of the matter is, as it relates to fuel, there is no profit in fuel. Fuel is a cost that is passed through to the customer on a dollar-for-dollar basis. There are no earnings associated with fuel, and what we pay for fuel is, in essence, what our customers pay. There is no markup.
Okay. And not too long ago, Dominion, you were basically putting out a press release that your bills would be going down. It's interesting because you always want to announce that rates are going down, and you want to announce that when, you know, customers respond to their latest bill and what's this for. You were able to do that back in June.
Right. Again, the same as what Charles was saying. There's no profit in there. We obviously try to manage our fuel cost as best we can, and there's no profit in what we pass through to customers, and we were able to lower our fuel rate this year.
Okay. Do you face, David, with the cooperative, a different set of challenges? Are people as interested in the fluctuation of rates? Is it a different kind of scrutiny by customers?
We have a very different business model. We are regulated by the State Corporation Commission, just like APCO and Dominion, so we have periodic rate reviews. Our cost of purchase power for us is passed through without any margins. The margins that we make are on our delivery business. But as I mentioned earlier, our customers are our owners. So effectively, if we have any profit margin at the end of the year, if our revenues are higher than our expenses, that goes back to our members in the form of what we call capital credits. So they get the money back. I'd also like to talk about the recovery of potential recovery of costs like this, extraordinary costs for a major storm. We budget a certain amount every year for storm restoration, but given an event like this, it's far more than we have budgeted. We have an opportunity as a not-for-profit business to seek recovery of a portion of those costs from FEMA. We heard a news report earlier, as before the program started, about some of the localities around the state were eligible for FEMA cost recovery. The governor has to declare a state of emergency, and the president has to acknowledge that certain counties and localities are eligible for those funds. So for Rappahannock, I think 11 of the counties that were impacted are eligible for some portion of reimbursement of those costs. And I'm sure you've got listeners served by other cooperatives around the state, and I think 9 of the 11 co-ops in the state were impacted by the storm, and they have that same opportunity potentially to have federal reimbursement of some of their costs.
Our number is 866-611-NEWS. That's 866-611-6397. Call us. Virginia Conversations will continue in a minute. You're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. Today we're talking about the lessons learned from last month's derecho with our guests from Appalachian Power, Dominion Power, and Rappahannock Electric Co-op. You can join the conversation by calling our toll-free number, 866-611-NEWS. Now we have a call from Alan from Rich Creek. Go ahead. Hi, Alan, can you hear me? All right, let's move to line. Yes.
This is Mike from Roanoke.
Oh, well, you know what? You can take Alan's place for now.
Okay. I'm calling to ask about the question that was discussed regarding the costs of undergrounding. While I appreciate the incredible costs and it may be prohibitive, I wonder if we take into account the fact we know we're going to have ice storms and derechos and hurricanes and so forth, all of the work loss, the economic impact of those rolled together with the cost of the actual repairs and replacements, whether it still is considered prohibitive from a cost point of view in that respect.
Okay, who wants to take that?
I guess, May Lily, since I've brought the subject up, I'll continue with it. The 2005 study did say it was cost prohibitive overall, even even considering all those things that you did mention. However, as I stated, you know, we're hearing what you're stating, and I realize you're not a Dominion Virginia Power customer. Our customers are telling us they want us to look at it again. So we're looking at it piecemeal and seeing what we can do to work on the situation. There are some pieces of it. Let me give you just one example of a barrier that the utilities will deal with in terms of placing facilities underground. The right-of-ways that were procured for the facilities that were installed decades ago were for overhead facilities. So before we can place facilities underground, we have to get new right-of-way from every property owner. And it only takes one property owner to shut a project down. So, I mean, there are a number of challenges like that that defy the common sense of it that we'll be challenged with as we evaluate it.
Okay. We have a call from Jane from Floyd. Go ahead, Jane.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I've had solar panels for almost 30 years, and I live with a sort of community of people where that was our intention, and we have done it. I still do get regular electricity because I am a potter, and I have shifted from a wood to a gas now to an electric kiln. And so I love the – I haven't gotten the gizmo yet that allows me to feed back into the system from my solar when I'm not needing it. I think that is absolutely brilliant, and in the long run, in terms of getting away from the coal and oil industry, that individuals having solar would not only make them more independent, but I didn't have any problems during the derecho because I had my own source. So I would like to know how the electric companies are looking at this and looking at the future and how they can potentially encourage and work with these alternatives so that in the long run we all are served by it.
Thanks, Jane. I know, Rodney, you've got some insight into that.
Thank you. We are looking at renewables all the way from the wind turbines at the generation side all the way through. We are looking at pilot programs for installing solar panels on commercial buildings as well as residential programs. They're in the pilot program process right now, and we're evaluating them based upon. I think what you said is it helped you in terms of your emergency preparedness, which I champion you for. That's a wonderful thing that you used that to be prepared. But we're also looking at it in terms of how we can help customers save money.
Okay. Did we lose Alan from Rich Creek, or should we give him one more try? Alan, are you there? Okay, goodbye.
And on that subject, if I could just jump in for
a moment.
In addition to, we too are supporters of renewable energy. We have north of 1,000 megawatts of wind on our system currently. In addition to that, we have in West Virginia, we have a very aggressive energy efficiency program in place to help, while it's not it's a supply side means of reducing consumption and helping customers. And we're looking at the same in Virginia and do plan on filing something in Virginia probably around the same time as our biennial case next year.
All right. Marilyn from Keswick, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
I'm calling about someone who is in Ivy, who is disabled and has a very hard time economically and physically. And she was without power for many, many days. I think it was a week. And she could never get any help except some volunteer, wonderful help from one person who labored terribly hard. And she had an insurance deductible of $1,000. She pays insurance every month, and it would cover nothing because the two cars that were ruined, their value is under $1,000. And the huge trees that fell on these cars were so difficult to remove, but one kind person did it, and that person is a laborer and needs to earn money, and he is getting no pay for doing that, whereas he thought he would get paid, but his heart is so good that he has gone on and done this with no complaint, really, and his car is ruined, and he's trying to put it back together.
So this echoes what we were talking about earlier, how there are specific cases during a storm as devastating as this one in which people will be affected, and sadly some of those who are most vulnerable are folks that you've mentioned and the one we talked about at the top of the show. That is part of the storm. How much of that falls on the shoulders of the power companies that are trying to get out there and do the best they can?
Well, we understand the power company, but is FEMA able to help? It looks as though she is not going to get any money at all, nor is her wonderful helper.
Right. Gentlemen, might that be out of your purview?
Yes, ma'am.
Well,
yes.
I would say this about FEMA, and just to add on to something David had said. While FEMA is primarily targeted toward a not-for-profit, there is, under the Stafford Disaster Relief and Emergency Act, an opportunity if a significant amount of your service territory is economically challenged, that a for-profit utility may be able to get FEMA funds to offset some of the cost of restoration. And that is something that APCO is aggressively looking into, along with many of its neighboring utilities. And so we are pursuing that, but it is a much higher hurdle for those of us who are for-profit businesses.
There you go, Marilyn, and thank you for your call. Joe from the Eastern Shore, you have a question.
Yes, thank you, and good morning. 20, 30 years ago, I worked on some national security emergency preparedness programs looking at the national grid in terms of protecting it from man-made and natural disasters. Of course, that was during the Cold War, and we were particularly concerned with electromagnetic pulse coming from nuclear activity. But today we see we're entering the solar 11-year cycle, and there's coronal mass eruptions occurring daily. Are any of the gentlemen active or can share with us national security emergency preparedness planning for enhancing and restoring the national grid? Thank you.
Who wants to take that?
I'll give it a shot. In the wake of 9/11, our interaction with national security agencies like Homeland Security has escalated, as you would imagine. We work closely. We participate in drills with the State Department of Emergency Management as well as federal officials, and we drill things that where there could be an impact on the grid. Directly as it relates to solar activity, we have meteorologists on staff that monitor not just the weather, like we're expecting some weather this afternoon, but also solar activity and a great long-term, very experienced group of engineers that assure me that we are protected against our concerns there.
Gary from the Charlottesville area, hold one moment. I know you have a question that follows us up on the issue of buried lines. I have a question here I'd like to read. Who can answer this one? If lines are underground, and it seems that, by the way, the buried lines issue is on our minds this morning. If lines are underground, in addition to rate increases, would each homeowner incur the additional costs of undergrounding the lines that connect to their home? So once again, maybe Rodney, do you want to address that one again, because you have become our undergrounding line expert?
It seems as such. the manner in which the rates are constructed in terms of how we're compensated for the work we do is all settled in the Re-Regulation Act or rate cases that associated with it. So, you know, in terms of how, for our current reliability programs, for instance, it's part of the base rate case, and the commission just decides based upon the merits of the case presented. It would be, I presume, no different in that regard. So the answer is, frankly, I don't know, and it would be the commission to decide.
Okay. Gary from the Charlottesville area, can you follow up with your question or comment?
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. Once again, it's about the underground utility idea. When a new housing development comes on board, can that developer work a relationship with the power company to bury electrical utility lines? Is that possible and being done?
Most of what we install today, this is Dominion Virginia Power, is underground. And in frankly, is under most circumstances, is underground for free to the developer.
All right, I'm going to turn the tape a little bit. We're asking,
and that is also the case for us in those suburban areas in our footprint where undergrounding is practical. It's APCO.
Do you want to respond?
No, I was just saying that that is also the case for us in suburban areas where undergrounding is also practical. Most of what goes in today is underground.
Okay. We've asked representatives from these utility companies to ask what their lessons have been in the wake of the storm. We want to turn that around and ask, how about you? What did you, the listener, learn from the derecho power outages? You can share that with us by calling as well, 866-611-NEWS. And Mark from Fincastle, you have a comment?
Yes, my question regards the storm damage to the utility lines and equipment. From what I've seen and heard, it appears that most of the derecho damage was related to trees falling onto the lines and damaging equipment. I just wondered if part of the cost for the storm repairs could have been offset by better maintenance of the utilities' right-of-ways regarding trees and that type of thing.
All right. Who has a response for that?
Well, I believe Rodney and David had referenced this earlier, so I throw in a similar answer, and that is that when you look at this storm, and in Lynchburg, for example, which is our service territory, we recorded at the airport 81 miles per hour winds. And when you have a right-of-way, which is 20 feet wide, and you have a 60 or 70-foot tree come down across that right-of-way, then there's very little that vegetation management is going to do under those circumstances. Where vegetation management makes a significant difference in the day-to-day life of our customers are those momentaries when you have small storms and there are tree contacts to our facilities where limbs that haven't been trimmed away become problematic. That's vegetation management in its purest sense, but again, 70-foot trees blowing down across the right-of-ways, vegetation management wasn't going to stop that.
Okay, we have another caller who is forward-thinking about green power. And Carrie from Norfolk, go ahead with your question or comment.
Hey, caller from Norfolk. Just out of curiosity, I've approached several electricians in regards to putting a wind generator and solar on my house toward offset costs. This is directed towards your Dominion Power representative. All the electricians that I've spoke with have said it's cost prohibitive to get Dominion Power involved. Can you just speak to, is there any type of supplement program or subsidy in order to get a house on it, kind of off the grid?
What do you think, Rodney?
Not that I'm aware of, and I frankly can't comment on what the electricians are telling you because that's their opinion. You know, I applaud you for looking into the renewable generation as an option for you to make sure that you're prepared for things like the hurricanes and this derecho event.
Okay. 866-611-NEWS. That's 866-611-6397 is the number to call. And earlier I put this question to you, what lessons did you learn? Well, guess what? I haven't heard an answer yet, so I'm going to answer as a listener. I watched as derecho hit, and I became a new tenant of Starbucks while the power was out. And I saw that my neighbor was enjoying his life and his business as usual. And why? It's because he had long ago installed a backup generator. And I love all of the green discussion, too. If one can get through the costs and some of the disadvantages around some of the alternative methods of keeping power going, that's wonderful, too. But I thought he was so smart. And to this day, I still have it on my to-do list, which is about number 49, to buy a backup generator. All right, so another question for you all as we march toward the end of the program is what your feelings are around the next time and what the top talking points are for how you will face another derecho type, and hopefully we'll not have another one, but another derecho type storm. Just to summarize where we were, I'll start with you, Charles. Just recap for us.
Well, where we are is that, again, we believe that the men and women of Appalachian Power Company and the many crews that we brought in from the 22 states around the country to restore service in our service territory, as well as our neighbors, Dominion, who helped us when they were completed with their work, did an outstanding job, and they are to be praised for what they did. That being said, with any of these types of storms, there are opportunities for improvement, and we are aggressively reviewing all of those.
All right.
And for example, one, again, we need to get more granularity in letting customers know when we're going to restore service. We're going to have to do things to improve our call center volume.
And
those are the types of things that we learned.
Sure. And Rodney, 30 seconds.
Thanks to our customers for how they handled themselves in this event and demonstrated their preparedness and got through it safely, as well as the emergency managers. We're spending a lot of time focusing on improving our communications to customers such that when this happens again, because it is weather in the Commonwealth, that we're ready and that we're communicating information that's helpful to our customers.
David Kugler, sorry, but 20 seconds.
Okay, same thing. Our focus going forward is really on communications. We're asking for feedback from our members through surveys, town hall meetings, focus groups. Let us know what you think. We're looking at new means of reporting outages and providing updates,
okay,
such as text messages.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. For Virginia Conversations, I'm May Lily Lee.
Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org. And by listeners of this Virginia Public Radio member station. Listeners can hear this program again or access other Virginia Public Radio news content at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.